We're coming, and we ain't backing down.
We don't need a bunch of cats in here. Yeah, looking in the mirror.
I'm bitterly disappointed with the officiating today.
Guys being dudes.
And they run through our like through a tin horn, man.
Thank you, Lee.
Oh, it's Kirshner. Good morning.
Richard Johnson, good morning to you. How are you?
We'll see. Jags just kicked off. Already off the field. Falcons have the ball back.
My heart hurts for you.
But my heart hurts for a lot of college football teams. We're going to take 30 minutes on the clock. We're going to do a 30-ish minute look at the day that was in college football. This is the end of September. We will soon transition to play your way on the hurry up status. We are not there yet. One programming note before we get going. Next week, the hurry up will drop on October 9th. Have some scheduling difficulties that actually have nothing to do with me, by the way, even though I will be at a game next weekend. Scheduling difficulties, we will drop the hurry up on Monday morning next week. Wanted to let the listeners know about that.
I'll just tell you out and out, I got a fall wedding and I'm going to it. Go to fall weddings. It's fine. I will watch all of the games back on Sunday and we will record the hurry up on Monday. You have to set an example of what you want to see in the world. And while we all love college football, go to your best friend's weddings. Don't skip them. It's important. All right. Off soapbox. Hurry up.
One of the things you don't want to see in the world, especially if you're an LSU fan, is this.
There's the snap. Two-man rush. Daniels wants to throw. He's being chased by Cedric Johnson. Now steps back to the left. Throws toward the back of the end zone. The pass is going to be deflected and incomplete.
It's over.
There is no flag. Ole Miss
it's over.
Has won over LSU 55-49.
That's David Kellum from the Ole Miss Sports Network from Learfield. Download the new Varsity Network app available for both Apple and Android. Listen to college sports live with the Varsity Network app. Alex, 30 minutes goes on the clock now in 3, 2, 1. Indeed, Ole Miss 55, LSU 49. As shambolic a tackling performance. Well, not the most shambolic a tackling performance. We'll get to that in a second. But about as shambolic as you will ever see from a college football team of LSU's caliber. LSU's secondary, horrific in this game. LSU's defense, horrific in this game. Offense, great. Defense, not so great. And it's just, it ain't going to cut it.
Two losses by the end of September for LSU means it's going to be not quite outright impossible, but pretty hard for them to do the kind of thing that their fan base was hoping they would do in year two under Brian Kelly. I'm wondering why Alabama could keep Ole Miss to 10 points because Ole Miss couldn't block them.
But the
difference between what LSU's defense looked like against what you perceive to be a pretty good Ole Miss offense compared to what maybe their chief West rival, but maybe not anymore, because they got to worry about Ole Miss, looked like against that team. Concerning. Very concerning. Also, Harold Perkins still doesn't really seem like himself for reasons of scheme or I don't know.
But hold on. This isn't I want to be clear with the audience because a lot of people, he's not being played at linebacker anymore. He is being played where everybody wants him to be played. The defensive line. It's pretty much switched from his positional status. But the concerns remain regarding his physicality. There was never a problem with his speed, his first step, his explosiveness, all that kind of stuff. There was a problem with taking on blocks and tackling. That remains.
Richard, we've got some more audio. I want to play this from Scott Howard of the Georgia Bulldogs Sports Network from Learfield in partnership with JMI.
Dogs trying to drive down for a go-ahead score. We're knotted at 20. Clock approaching 3 minutes to go. Edwards in the backfield now with Beck. They snap it back. Carson throws. There's Bowers open at the 26. Breaks away at the 20 to the 10. Angles to the pylon. Touchdown. Brock Bowers.
Georgia 27, Auburn 20. Georgia has regressed from a talent perspective from the best defense in the last two decades. That is fine. They are not the fully formed article. That is fine. They are certainly trying to gather the identity. This is a thing where our perception of Georgia over the last 2 years, everybody understands why you have that perception and why you think it continues. But for the people in that room, this is a new team. And I think this is what you're seeing. New team trying to congeal offensive line injuries on offense. Yes, I know you're all mad at Mike Bobo. If you're a Georgia fan, I get it. I understand. I know. Brock Bowers is an insane football player. 40-yard touchdown to ice the game. Brock Bowers got Auburn so shook that Auburn's defensive coordinator is arguing with fans on Twitter about how they covered him. Yes, I understand that that was probably bracket coverage on the touchdown and that Ladd McConkey sort of not going vertical created a little bit of miscommunication, I think, on Auburn's back end. Nobody carried Brock Bowers vertical. Nobody carried Brock Bowers vertical on the inside with inside leverage. And it's not a great thing when I can't really tell if you're bracketing a receiver or if you're just bracketing a receiver really poorly. So, look, Brock Bowers is an insane college football player. And when this game got to the business end and a championship team had to assert itself, which is what they did at the end of the third quarter and into the fourth quarter when Bowers had, I think, six catches, like 100-some-odd yards, it's just that's what they are. They're a great football team, and they're still trying to find their footing and find their identity. Carson Beck in a road spot on the SEC, in the SEC for the first time. This stuff happens.
If you're a defensive coordinator and you're arguing on Twitter about any coverage, you can't win that argument. You've lost by the fact that you're having the argument. I do think Auburn is going to stay in some games this year because of their secondary, which was one of the areas, one of the few where they retained an assistant from the last staff, Zach Etheridge. They have good players who are in that secondary, and until the dam broke with Brock Bowers, they were giving some trouble to McConkey and Bowers and to Georgia and Carson Beck as they tried to do things down the field. It's a good unit, and it will keep them in some games. Alabama 40, Mississippi State 17. Richard, an indicator of progress for Alabama?
Yeah, they threw the ball 12 times.
Yeah.
Like I mentioned this in the midweek. There's a blueprint for the Jalen Milrow Alabama offensive experience. I think you saw it in this game.
A&M 34, Arkansas 22. Everyone dumps on Jimbo Fisher a lot, and he deserves it because he makes more money than he has justified with his production on the field. And I think that the stubbornness point about how he runs his offense is still very fair game. But this game for him with a backup quarterback and Max Johnson was a big time coaching performance by whichever combination of Jimbo and Bobby Petrino does that offense. I still don't really know. And their defense looked incredibly serious a couple weeks after not really looking serious when they played Miami. I think it was a well-run game for A&M against an Arkansas team that is clearly troubled, but is a respectable SEC opponent and wasn't playing a backup QB.
I think it was 15 tackles for a loss for A&M in this game. And it's the second week in a row, I think they've done this or something near it from a defense performance. That defensive front is finally showing up, showing its teeth. Very good to see. One defensive front that did not show any teeth at all from snap one to the end of the game. Kentucky 33, Florida 14. It's embarrassing from Florida. That is the same experience as I believe it was 2021 when LSU came out and just said, hey, we're going to run counter till you stop it. And you never stopped it and you never got close. Kentucky had a similar blueprint. We're going to run gap scheme runs at your face all afternoon until you prove that you can stop it. And they couldn't do it. Florida's second and third level defenders in this game were horrific. We talked about LSU's tackling a couple minutes ago. As bad from Florida, if not worse. Ray Davis, the Vanderbilt transfer for Kentucky, gave Kentucky its identity back. We've talked about Kentucky's offensive line slipping over the last couple years. Didn't look like that in this game. Didn't look like that at all in this game. So, yes, the questions are going to come back about Billy Napier, but this is going to be an up and down team. It's a situation where, and I'm not telling Florida fans to not be upset about this. Yeah, man, be pissed that you lost by 20 points to Kentucky and you were never in this game. Kentucky dropped a touchdown that forced into a field goal, or it would have been worse. But everybody thinks they're okay with a rebuild in theory until they live through a rebuild. This is living through a rebuild. Florida State went 5-7 in year two with Mike Norvell and lost to an FCS team. Then they portaled, coached up really well, and figured it out. I understand it looks bad right now. I understand it feels bad right now. It's not a situation where I think you panic now, but I do think in year three, it's certainly shaping up to be a put up or shut up.
It's a dialogue about a potential dialogue. That's where we are. We're not yet at the dialoguing stage. Just dialoguing about a dialogue. Giving up a touchdown run. I saw people pointing this out, that they had given up a touchdown run to Ray Davis, one of, what, four for him? A lot. On a play where they had 13 men on the defense. And I thought,
the goal line play.
I thought, they had guys running off. Like, you know, this happens. Like, surely they didn't actually have 13 guys in the formation. No, Richard, they had 13 guys in the formation, actually playing defense, and he still scored.
The one thing that I think is absolutely inexcusable about that is that the entire week of college football discourse has been about making sure you have 11 people on the field, particularly in a goal line spot. It's another thing where functionally and administratively, this team is falling, is missing the mark. And that's a thing that can't happen.
Also, isn't Billy Napier the coach who hired like 70 support staffers with names like director of power vibes and like, you know, assistant charisma coordinator? Like, don't they have the guys in the polos on the sideline to make sure that everyone gets where they're supposed to? Not good. Missouri 38, Vanderbilt 21. Mizzou has playmakers and a 5-0 record. Luther Burden, Theo Weiss, all SEC type guys this year, and they're helping Brady Cook have the season of his life. This might be a pretty good team for Mizzou.
Yeah, I'm in for Mizzou, to be honest. And I believe they play LSU next week.
Notre Dame 21, Duke 14, in like a college game day game that lived up to that billing, despite looking at the beginning of the week like, there's not much going on, that's why they're there, which is true to some extent, but Duke was game in this game and had its heart ripped out in a way that people might actually feel bad for Duke University.
I thought in the beginning of this game, Notre Dame was about to play them off the park. It looked like that in the early going. It looked like Duke was not going to be able to put up or hang up physically. And then they made adjustments and they were able to. I think Duke's coaching staff has been really good at that over the course of the season in games. Notre Dame at the end, though, was able to do what they weren't last week, which is kind of pull it out in a tight spot here and rise above. It's good for Notre Dame. It's horrible for Duke that Riley Leonard appears very injured. We'll see. He left on crutches at the end of the game.
So there was a lot of armchair coordinating, which is fine. We all engage in it often. I'm not poo-pooing saying what you think a coach should do, but about the last drive on defense for Duke, specifically the 4th-and-16 scrambler for Sam Hartman that kept this game alive. Duke dropped 8. They rushed 3 after putting a good bit of pressure on him earlier on the drive, and a lot of people were saying inexcusable that they didn't bring more pressure. I don't think it was inexcusable. It's 4th-and-16. The thing your defense is good at is preventing the big pass play. It's been your strength. It's what you portaled to do with guys coming in from places like Miami, from A&M. It's what you were so good at against Clemson. And you're playing a quarterback who's not Lamar Jackson. Like, since he got hurt last year, he has barely run the ball. He had -9 rushing yards coming into this game. It's sacks, but still. Like, sometimes a guy just makes an inexplicable play. And good for Sam Hartman that he did. I didn't think it was a ridiculous way to manage the game from Duke's perspective.
Sometimes your edge rusher gets pushed past the quarterback's depth and allows him to escape. Clemson 31, Syracuse 14. Clemson, I'm not going to say smoked Syracuse in this game, but this was not in the second half a game where I ever thought this was in doubt. Like, Clemson did the business the way everybody has been asking them to do the business. They threw deep. I thought Kate Klubnik looked better in this game. Will Shipley, I retain again, looks explosive. I missed on that evaluation coming into the season. I think Will Shipley's a good player, and they are good running the ball. And the offense has come along. The defense never had an issue with it, never was worried about it, continues to be good. It's a good win for Clemson. They needed this type of win, especially in a spot where they play a team that has given them hell over the last few years.
Yeah, well played by Clemson. Virginia Tech 38, Pitt 21. Amazing crowd at Lane Stadium for a team that was 1-3 coming into this game. And then the Hokies gave them something to cheer about. Played really well. It was like the first happy offensive performance for Virginia Tech against a serious, well, I don't know if Pitt's serious, but against a power conference opponent. Maybe in Brent Pry's entire year and a half tenure there. Very impressive night for Virginia Tech. 3-9 for Pitt looks really possible. 2-10 looks possible. Like, they're not the worst team in the ACC because of a team that we're going to get to in a second, a couple teams that we're going to get to, but they are really bad. And I think are so bad that at the least you're like in a situation where the AD makes the coach fire the coordinator offensively after the year. Pitt's defense sucks too. They should be able to figure that out at some point because Pat Narduzzi is Pat Narduzzi, but it is a disaster season for Pitt. Could be the worst Pitt season in many, many years. Boston College 27, UVA 24. Feel bad for UVA, which is now 0-5 and had a chance to win this game. The game turned on a little two-man game wide receiver screen where you look at it, it's clear as day. Both defensive backs for UVA went to engage the blocker, and nobody went to Lewis Bond, who had the ball. 33-yard touchdown, Boston College wins. They win a little bit later, but it was tough.
Jacksonville 7, Atlanta 0. Hi, Godfrey. Bowling Green 38, Georgia Tech 27. Man. Dude, Georgia Tech was getting, like, worked in this game.
Yeah.
Worked.
Oh, they got killed. They got killed. Yeah, like, they got killed by the team that entered 126th in SP+. By combination of opponent caliber and how lopsided it was, this is one of the worst losses that a Power 5 team has taken in a very long time. Like, it is a memorably bad loss, and I don't care that it's year one. And it's not even an entirely standard year one, given the continuity of Brent Key being there before. Louisville 13, NC State 10. NC State is totally lost on offense. But good for Louisville for winning a game in which they, too, were pretty lost on offense. They had sack and turnover problems, and Jack Plummer didn't have nearly as good a game as he had a start. He gave the ball a couple of times to NC State, including very deep in NC State territory. So good for Louisville. NC State, man, they need Devin Leary home, and he's not coming, so I don't know what to do.
NC State hasn't run the ball well in the last couple of years. I mean, I know, you know, Tim Beck's not there anymore, but like, yeah, they haven't run the ball well in the last couple of years. They don't have that gear. It's, I don't know, some ACC stuff here going on as per usual. Alex, as per usual, we have to give a shout out, stop here, and shout out Home Field Apparel. Of course, you're wearing a Stephen Godfrey Hates My Team t-shirt, so at least somebody's wearing Home Field Apparel.
I am. I'm in my Stephen Godfrey Hates My Team shirt. Shout out to our beloved YouTube audience if you are watching me flash the front of that shirt to you right now. Homefieldapparel.com. Use the promo code SCD20 for 20% off your first order. It's the finest in all the land at what they do at Homefield. That's premium. That's vintage. That's very comfortable and officially licensed collegiate apparel. We are in it often, whether around the house or out, because when you have a chance to wear comfortable stuff that also looks good, what else are you going to wear? Also, I'll remind people, I'm very excited. I am going to be on the weekend of Georgia's homecoming, which is November like 3rd, 4th, 5th, that Friday night. And you can go to Homefield's Twitter page and see all the details there. I am going to be with Homefield that Friday evening in Athens, doing a panel with some media friends, some former players, some Dogs fans. Would love to see you there at Homefield's live event in Athens, Georgia.
USC 48, Colorado 41. A lot going on here. I'm sorry. USC's defense is just completely unserious. I'm not taking them seriously as a championship contender. I'm not taking them seriously, honestly, as a Pac-12 championship contender. If they are going to play defense like this, we know what USC's offense is. They go into halftime 34-14, doing everything you want, and then the second half happens. I do think, though, and I want to make this point, that it is noteworthy that Colorado battled back in this game in the way that they did. I think when you've got a Colorado team that has the chance to have two back-to-back games that get like farcically out of hand, for them to arrest the slide there and come back, I think was pretty noteworthy. A lot of questions about how Colorado managed the end of the game, down two scores with about five-ish minutes left, took their own sweet time.
It was a little much champ drive. Yeah, that took a while.
Now, I actually disagree with some of the criticisms on this, because I think I understand what Colorado was actually trying to do. Colorado was, in my opinion, playing for the onside kick, because they knew if they gave USC the ball back, USC was definitely going to score. I think they were playing for the onside kick so that they could get the ball back and they could probably score, which I do think is probably a correct assumption on Colorado's point as far as thinking, we are going to score no matter what. I know Deion had some bluster about that after the game.
Yeah, I think they still could have maybe gone a little faster where they could afford to, where they could have a chance to get the ball back if they did get a stop. But it was a game fight. And I think it was different this week. Like, they didn't get physically pounded into the ground the same way that they did against Oregon, which is important. No. But I do think that what Colorado did in this game was be a little fundamentally unsound. You know, they had a punt blocked where the punter seemed to take quite a while and the protection wasn't very good. A lot in a number of USC's cases, guys were just wide open in a way that suggested either breakdowns or just Lincoln Riley beating Charles Kelly. It was just a bit unsound. And that, by the way, happens in college football, especially, I would note, when you have an entirely new team that has only been playing together for a couple of weeks.
The one thing that I do think to note about Colorado that needs to get shorn up among things is the special team. Special teams have been bad in different ways all seasons for Colorado. And I think it starts to matter because I think they're going to get in these close shootout-y games moving forward as they get into the meat of Pac-12 play against more of the mid and lower tier Pac-12 teams. Speaking of low and mid tier Pac-12 teams, Cal 24, Arizona State 21. Shout out to Arizona State. If you're going to use a bowl ban when you're not going to make a bowl. And I think Arizona State's looking at that here. With
oh
this
my
team.
Goodness. This is the
and
first
I know it's injuries, but you know,
this is the first smart thing that Arizona State's administration has done with their football program since before they hired Herm Edwards. Like, these fellas looked at their team in August and they were like, you know what? We think this is a moment to make a sacrifice to the NCAA. That is exactly what happened here. And Kenny Dillingham played his role to perfection, gave that press conference like totally indignant about these young men losing this opportunity. Kenny had to know they were not going to have this opportunity anyway. Everyone playing their role very well here.
I didn't think Kenny knew they were going to be on QB3.
No, I don't think he knew that either. But just very well done by Arizona State's football operation here to like know when to do this to let the NCAA go easier on you. Very, very wise. Washington 31, Arizona 24. I'm not that worried about Washington getting a handful here. That team, by the way, always has. That program for years has had very tough nights in the state of Arizona. I think a road win is a road win. It's fine.
Yeah. Washington stopped a little late on. Stopped themselves a little bit late on. Okay, send me to October 14th. Both teams are off until then. Washington, Oregon, yes. Oregon State 21, Utah 7. You do not have to respect Utah here until Utah gets Cam Rising back and we see if Utah has a functional offense. This is not about controlling a game. This is not about plotting. This is not about physically or imposing your will, whatever. This is shit offense. They are bad on offense. If Cam Rising comes back and they become good, congratulations. But until then, it's unplayable. It's not serious.
If the defense gives up more than 14 points or so, you can't win with this offense. Kansas 40, Texas. Sorry, I have this backward on our notes. It was not Kansas 40. It was Texas 40. Kansas 14.
Leave it in.
Yeah,
no,
leave it in.
It was not Kansas 40.
We will leave it in. Jalen Daniels gets hurt right before this game, but I don't think it changes things if he's playing. They were physically beaten.
I think that Texas is good, man. Can't wait for Red River next week. I think that Texas comes in and says, okay, we're going to get a small dose of Jason Bean, the Kansas backup quarterback. But then the fact that Jason Bean was their primary quarterback allowed Lance Leipold and that offensive staff to do some sick, sick things. I mean, they were basically running the triple option in this game. It was hilarious. And then it gets out of hand. Texas had like 660 yards of offense in this game. I think it was a Big 12 record for Texas, which is hilarious given. You know,
Jonathan Brooks was untackleable. Like it was one of those situations where they blocked it up for him, but also he looked like Bijan. Like he looked like insert your really good Texas running back from the last 20. Like it was just really impressive individually to watch what he did in this game. Oklahoma 50, Iowa State 20. Best thing that's happened to Iowa State's offense in a long time, I think, was Hunter Decker's leaving amid a gambling investigation and then playing this youngster Rocco Becht.
Not the gambling thing,
but like they wound up with a quarterback they can build with here. Like he's got spunk. He's very small and very young, much like Brock Purdy once was, but he's got spunk. However, Oklahoma is really good. I think they're really good. We'll know how good in a week, or we'll get a better indication of that in a week. But Oklahoma is likelier to win the Big 12 this year than we are to be talking in any way about Brent Venables' job security. Like they might be really good. There's no way they're really bad.
West Virginia 24, TCU 21. West Virginia certainly playing Neil Brown off of the fired bubble if they continue to do this in the, you know, nebulous kind of middle tier of the Big 12. Some of this, God love our friends at TCU, blocked field goal at the end of this game to give West Virginia the win, is some close game luck swinging all the way back for our friends.
Texas Tech 49, Houston 28. For a while, back and forth, close, good game. One of the plays of the year, one of the smooth special teams plays that you'll ever see, Loic Fungi for Tech, comes in, cleanly blocks a punt, catches it on a weird bounce, returns it himself for a touchdown. Love to see that. But Houston just stopped participating as this game went on. Like they were in it, and then they just were not.
UCF 36, Baylor 35. I really don't know how to explain this cogently to our audience.
I hope you watched it in the fourth quarter.
Yeah.
It was wild. Baylor threw, I don't remember exactly how much time was left in, I think, the third quarter when they started this comeback, but they were down 26 points in this game. Like, it was over. I mean, they might have been down 28 points in this game.
Yeah,
it was over, and over, not just like in the game, but like Baylor looked over, like as a going concern under Dave Aranda. I mean, and they still have massive concerns, but then they did all of the things that you do to come back from four touchdowns down. I mean, like everything that went badly started going really well, and then they showed some resilience because UCF, which had Timmy McClain at quarterback, pulled off like a fourth down conversion that you might never see again in all your days watching football. But then using the clock as kind of a 12th defender, Baylor was able to force a long field goal, and it did not have nearly enough leg, even though the kicker's last name is Boomer. And it's a great win for Baylor to really spoil the home Big 12 debut for UCF.
BYU 35, Cincinnati 27. I am personally not quite sure what to do with Cincinnati.
I think they're just not very good. And their best win is against Pitt, which we now know is terrible. I don't think they're very good. I think that BYU might be pretty good. It gets to be, and I understand, as we've talked about, BYU fans' absolute tiredness with the narrative, but BYU is an older, and I think in a lot of cases, just physically stronger team than these other new entrants to the Big 12. That's not just because of the age gap, but I think like they have... This is what BYU has often been like. BYU does not get manhandled on the lines in the way that you would expect a team going up to the Big 12 to get pushed around. Obviously, in this case, they're playing another team that is making the jump, and I think BYU looks more ready to play at this level than Cincinnati does. Also, Keaton Slovis looks like athletic, which I did not see coming. They might have figured something out with him. In the Big Ten, Michigan, many. Nebraska, very, very few.
You've seen this game. What is Michigan, 5-0? You've seen this game five times. You've seen this exact same game five times. This one just didn't have the Cade McNamara. This just didn't have the three interceptions they had against Bowling Green, whatever it was.
Two, I think. Just, yeah.
Just save it, and I'll see you on Veterans Day, Michigan, when you play Penn State.
Maryland 44, Indiana 17. Maryland is 5-0, hasn't played anyone of note, but is crushing teams, which is what we want to see. My eyebrow is raised a little going into Columbus. I don't expect anything. I don't know if Maryland will beat Ohio State in my lifetime, but my eyebrow is raised just a little bit about Maryland going into that game. On the Indiana front, it's really bad. Tom Allen seems like a nice guy. He had a great year in 2020 when college football was in a very weird state and they backed up the Brinks truck for him. It hasn't worked out. It's a terrible contract. They are worse than they have to be. And everyone knows that Indiana is Indiana and that they're not going to be expected to contend in the Big Ten. But there is just no way that this even becomes a solid bowl program again under him. I think it is over. This is a low point. Do they have to fire him at a huge buyout that's around like even $20 million at the end of the season? No, but it's a choice. I think if you run this back again, you are just saying, we are a basketball school. This is not worth it to us. And we are punting on football for the foreseeable future because it's not going to get better. This is over. for Indiana football under Tom Allen?
Jacksonville 10, Atlanta 0. I'm sure the kids are enjoying the Toy Story broadcast. Penn State 41, Northwestern 13. This game went to halftime and I tied and I texted you like, is Penn State messing around here? What's the deal? And then Penn State dropped the hammer.
Yeah, you don't have to make anything. Like, this happens in college football.
It's the same thing with Michigan. Like, do the business. Like, you're doing the business. Okay.
Yeah. Absolutely. Minnesota 35, Louisiana 24. Minnesota was in danger here early. Ultimately, though, finally got proof of life from that offense, which, yes, it's a Sun Belt team, but it's a pretty good and athletic Sun Belt team. So progress for the Minnesota offense. Iowa 26, Michigan State 16. Iowa got 26 points with one offensive. They had one offensive touchdown. They had a field goal drive that was negative yardage, and they had a Cooper DeJean punt return touchdown. Cooper DeJean is good. Kirk Ferentz is going to be very proud when that young man gets drafted as a cornerback into the NFL. Cade McNamara looked kind of seriously hurt for Iowa.
That was why Cade McNamara was in my head, because Cade McNamara got, yes, very injured in this game. That does not obviously bode well for Iowa trying to get over the 25-point margin. If you're an Iowa person, you're tired of hearing this, one of two things can happen. This team can score a lot. That's a thing that can happen. Or they probably shouldn't have done this in the first place, because they set themselves up for this throughout the entire season.
Purdue 44, Illinois 19. Shocking in terms of the margin. And like, Illinois getting kind of physically beaten up by Purdue in this game. Oh, 30 minutes. We're going over. Whoever could have guessed. But like, Purdue goes up.
Sure, not me.
Purdue goes up against a Bielema team and just kind of methodically, with a mix of runs and short passes, grinds them into dust. Very impressive. Must have been fun too.
Yeah,
for the head coach at Purdue, Ryan Walters.
Yeah, I was going to say, this is a big win in the Ryan Walters Bowl. Ryan Walters also brought in like 7 assistants from Illinois as well. So I'm sure that entire staff had a hell of a night last night. Rutgers is 4-1. Ignore who they beat. They're 4-1.
4-1, and Indiana and Michigan State are still on the schedule. That's an opportunity to win 6 games this year for Rutgers. In the American, Memphis 35, Boise 32. So Memphis was very uneven in this game, and Taylen Green went out for Boise. The backup, Maddox Madsen, was good. But you still turn a 17-0 deficit into a victory, where you're actually up 2 scores late before Boise scored a garbage time touchdown. Like, I think that and this, there was some luck involved. Like, they had a long block 6 from Jeffrey Canton-Arcou that turned this game in a significant way. So like, I don't know that Memphis is like dominant. In fact, they're definitely not dominant right now, but they're 4-1, and their only loss is a close one to a Mizzou team that we think might be pretty good. So good for Memphis, good for Ryan Silverfield.
Worried about Boise? Yes or no?
Yes. I mean, think about it. Even though Taylen Green got hurt, they ran the ball fine. Ashton Jeanty had 4 touchdowns in this game. I think 2 receiving, 2 rushing. And you still lose in the way that they lost. I don't know how you couldn't be concerned.
Tulane 35, UAB 23. Close game, though. Close game for the Blazers here. Obviously, the dust up on the sideline with Trent Dilfer and his coaching staff, or at least 2 or 3 coaches, is the thing that kind of leads the line here.
Yeah, it's kind of funny because UAB played well in this game and had a real chance to win. They have some players. Amari Thomas, the freshman receiver, made what's going to be one of the catches of the year down the field against Tulane in this game. But I thought Dilfer looked like kind of a dumbass. Every coach yells, but you have 0 FBS wins. Like, act in a way that won't get you talked about like this. I don't know what to tell you. Like, he has defenders who are like, oh, you never played a sport. And I think they attach like a cultural significance to Trent Dilfer, which, man, like, if you're using Trent Dilfer as a vehicle to make points about American society, reevaluate. USF 44, Navy 30. Continued reason for optimism around the USF Bulls. Byron Brown, their quarterback, a lot of fun. Navy scored 30 points. It's a lot for them. Navy's defense, as it's been for several years, not good.
Rice 24, ECU 17. Tried to tell you about Bull Rice. They're 3-2. James Madison 31 in the Sun Belt. South Alabama 33.
23.
Yep. We are going to find out about James Madison in a couple weeks. But for now, obviously, very good.
Yeah, James Madison gets into the meat of the Sun Belt. But I think that James Madison is the best team in the Sun Belt, which is funny, I think. I think we're going to see, which is intriguing because they can't win the Sun Belt or participate in postseason play. Troy gives it to Georgia State pretty good at the TED. I actually didn't even write down the final score, but it was a couple possession win for Troy over Georgia State. It was the first game of Georgia State season where they looked more like I thought they would look before the year. They're still on a nice track this year. Things are going well, but the Troy defense really did come to play in this game, looked more like its old self. Probably should have been more lopsided. Troy had a drop touchdown and then a missed field goal. By the same token, Georgia State had like a botched pitch play at the goal line that led to a fumble. So sloppy for GSU, for that GSU.
Texas State 50, Southern Miss 36. Don't let the final score make you, this was such a weird game. Texas State got up like 42-6 or something, and then Southern Miss came all the way back. I mean, Southern Miss made this a one possession game at the end. Texas State was able to get them off the field, short field, and then scored to get to their 50. This was a very odd game, but Texas State wins.
App State 41, ULM 40. App State never has a normal game. They just never have a normal
game. Incredible. 54-yard field goal at the end?
Yep. Michael Hughes for App brings them back from the abyss by making this kick. Would not have been pretty for the Sean Clark agenda at App. You know, they took a confounding loss last year to Texas State when Texas State was still really bad. And, you know, you can't keep doing that every year, and this would have been like that, but they make a kick. They do it on the road. Very exciting for App. Marshall 41, Old Dominion 35. Two teams that are really hard to figure out. Marshall is 4-0.
No, I don't think this is really hard to figure out. I think Marshall's good.
I think so. But it was curious the way that this game went for them. Also, like, it was kind of opposite their usual shtick, which is, we are bad at offense, but we stop you. This was a little shootouty, and it was a game with like 9 combined turnovers counting downs. So it was just weird, but 4-0 is not weird. 4-0 is 4-0. That's what Marshall is. Georgia Southern 38, Coastal Carolina 28.
Caleb Hood, Georgia Southern's talented wide receiver, is absolutely box office as a football player. It's crazy what happens when you don't turn the ball over 6 times. If Georgia Southern didn't do that against Nebraska, they would be 6-0.
I guess Wisconsin, Nebraska. But same.
Wisconsin.
They beat
Nebraska last year. That's what it was.
They did. You're absolutely correct. So for Coastal, Tim Beck has not started well here, and I don't entirely understand what his vision is or was for this program. They have a thing.
Can't run the ball.
They had a thing that they did really well with a roster that was geared to do that. And the quarterback, Grayson McCall, back to do it again. And they just have stopped being the shotgun triple option team of college football. Like, every once in a while, and I spent a lot of time with this game, they will throw in some like half-hearted pitch action that won't work, and then they'll go away from it again. I think part of it is that their line is just not what it used to be. Offensive, like, they've just lost the beef that they had up front, or maybe the chicken because it's the Chanticleers. But even with that, it seems like a wholesale offensive philosophical shift, while you still have Grayson McCall for another year and it's not working, and I don't really get it, and I'd like to see where it goes from here. But it's concerning because I think they're done as what they were.
Arkansas State 52, UMass 28. We've talked a lot about Arkansas State on this program being one of the worst teams in FBS. They switched the quarterback. The guy's name is Jalen Rayner. They are now no longer one of the worst teams in FBS. They are potentially quite competent, if nothing else. This is the proof of concept, you know, step forward, et cetera, that you want if you're an Arkansas State fan or supporter.
Very much so. Jacksonville State 35, Sam Houston 28 in overtime. Sam Houston had a nice comeback and probably should have had it.
Brutal. They should have won this game. They should have won this game.
Yeah, they let it slip ultimately in overtime. Interesting note from the end. A lot of us watching thought that there was a pretty terse-looking interaction between Rich Rod and Casey Keeler, Sam Houston's coach. KAGS and in Texas, the NBC affiliate, picked up the audio, and it was apparently just Rich Rod telling him, "You fucking outcoached us and you fucking outplayed us." Just telling them good job, despite Sam Houston continuing to hunt for a win in FBS.
Louisiana Tech 24, UTEP 10. Louisiana Tech does this kind of thing where they have their one win where you're like, oh, that's kind of nice. And then you remember that they're, I think, pretty bad overall. Hank Bachmeier hurt in this game as well.
Yes. Hank Bachmeier, I believe, didn't play at all in this game. There was an episode here where Louisiana Tech winds up suspending a linebacker, Brevin Randall, for stomping on someone's head, neck area.
Like, horrible.
It was really bad. I mean, it's like one of those. I don't like it when people take heat of the moment football things and are like, damn, this could invite non-football consequences. But like, you can't do that.
Yeah.
Like, it was really, really bad. Bad enough that Sonny Cumbie and Tech like put out statements. They suspended him indefinitely. Kind of hard to put that guy back on the field this year. I mean, you can't do that. You cannot do that. I think everyone agrees. In the MAC, Miami 23, Kent State 3. Kent is obviously a teardown job this year, but Miami is 4-1. Their only loss was to the other Miami. They have a win over Cincinnati. They did this without their best receiver, Gage Larvadane, and Brett Gabbert didn't do much without him. But I think that if you're looking for a MAC team other than Toledo and Ohio that has a chance to win the conference, Miami is looking like the best candidate right now to be that. Buffalo 13, Akron 10. Buffalo avoids going to 0-5. Good. You wouldn't have wanted 0-5.
Needed to win this with some defense, and they did that. Wyoming 35, New Mexico 26. When New Mexico had a kind of paltry score at the end there to secure our cover, by the way, if you had New Mexico plus 14, which you probably should have had because New Mexico's offense, I think, is better than it was last year. Was going to say good, don't mean good.
No.
Better than it was last year.
Not good. Trending upward, and I think some of what we talked about before the year with the UAB duo import of Bryant Vincent, the coordinator, and Dylan Hopkins, the quarterback, is working a little, but, you know, long way to go. And I think Wyoming is an obvious Mountain West title contender this year. In fact, I think they might win that league. And if they don't, the team that I think will is Air Force 49, San Diego State 10. Richard, Air Force, some ass kickers.
Mm-hmm. And San Diego State, some not ass kickers, by the way, up front in run defense, which is troubling for San Diego State because it's kind of your thing.
San Diego State has had a really tough few months as a program. They thought they were going to get a Pac-12 golden ticket. Pac-12 doesn't exist anymore. Fan base had gotten excited about this. They'd been very public about their intentions. They have this stunning new stadium in San Diego. It's one of the best settings in college football, and they cannot fill it. They don't get butts in seats. They have never figured out offense. The defense that they had been so good at has clearly slipped. They are frankly getting crushed in these games by teams at the top of the Mountain West that they think they should be. They were closer against Boise, but it hasn't been good enough. And this just isn't an exciting brand of football that is going to get people into this program at a moment when they really need to capitalize on at least having a new stadium and trying to keep people engaged after the Pac-12 didn't work out. What I'm saying is it's got to be graceful retirement time soon or firing time for Brady Hoke. They cannot do this next year. They need a jolt.
UNLV 44, Hawaii 21. UNLV 4-1. There are really no doubts about it. They are playing really well, particularly on offense.
So UNLV could win 8 games this year. Do you know the last time that happened was 2000? And did you know that John Robinson was UNLV's coach in 2000? Did you
incredible.
Did you know that he coached UNLV? I was like 5, 6, but yeah, John Robinson coached UNLV. Sometimes you just stumble into things about college football that you just didn't know. And I'm sure a lot of our listeners did know that, so I shouldn't admit it, but had no idea that John Robinson ever coached a game at UNLV.
What plurality of the audience do you think knew John Robinson coached UNLV in 2000? I'm not saying nobody in the audience.
Identify yourselves, audience members, if you did know that John Robinson coached UNLV. Tweet us. I knew that John Robinson coached UNLV. Utah State 34, UConn 33, UConn's 0-5, and they've had some close ones, but I don't think that they are as bad as like the worst UConns we've seen, but you are what your record says you are, and it's 0-5.
Jack's still up 10-0, holding up pretty well on the defensive end, it seems like, against the Falcons, but offense still leaving a little bit to be desired. We'll see how it ends up.
Godfrey is going to give you a hard time if this result changes by the time this podcast comes out.